Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Well, and welcome. Welcome to the First Parish Church, Stowe and Acton. We're happy to have you here. My name is Marvin Drake. I'm one of the three lay ministers here at First Parish. Myself, Marcia Rising, and Elizabeth Coppola are the other two. I should mention that childcare is available during this service in the nursery. The nursery is in the lower level of the fellowship hall, which can be reached by walking through either this level of the connector or downstairs to the fellowship hall, taking the elevator or the stairs down to the lower level. If the need arises any time during the service, please feel free to take your child there where she or he will be well cared for. If you're not sure where to go, one of our ushers will guide you. Now, everyone is invited to coffee hour after the service. To get there, please exit the church through this door and follow the hallway to the end. Go down the stairs, take the elevator, and there's an arrow that will point you into Fellowship Hall. If this is your first time with us, we're very happy to have you here. Please sign one of our guest books. There's one out in the vestibule. There'll be one over in the entrance to the new entrance to the church office, and one over in the coffee hour. There'll be a table there. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Marvin. And as community is so important to us here at First Parish, we begin this service with an opportunity to greet your neighbor. I particularly invite you to reach out to any guests or people who may be with us for the first or second or third time. Please say hello to them, introduce yourself, and invite them to coffee hour if you would. Often our religious education program for the morning follows the theme for our worship services, but today it's the other way around. We're taking our theme from them. Today our kids had a special presentation from Diane Krieger, a founder of a movement called Choose to Be Nice, whose mission is to inspire, promote, and encourage kindness whenever and wherever possible. This group is seeking 1 million people to make the following pledge. I promise to help spread kindness wherever and whenever possible, and to the very best of my ability, I'll be nice to those with whom I come in contact on a daily basis. Through the worship service this morning, may we come to see the wisdom of that pledge and commit to it as well. So let us now come together in love, attentive to what we share in this room, and to what is spoken deep in our hearts and souls. As Mike lights our chalice this morning, I invite you to join in the unison words of chalice lighting printed in your order of service. In a world filled with the darkness of ignorance, let us bring the light of reason. In a world filled with the darkness of despair, may we share the light of hope. In a world filled with the darkness of hate, let us shine with the light of love, compassion, and kindness. Please be seated and attentive to a message from our intern minister, Eileen Gillespie.
Good morning. So as Reverend Tom was sharing earlier, today's service is about kindness, and today's RE program is also about choosing to be nice and to be kind. And so this morning, I wanted to share a message for all ages, the parable of the Good Samaritan. Has anybody read this parable before? Great. So this was a story that Jesus told, and it has a lesson to teach us. So I want everybody to listen, everybody of all ages to listen, so that at the end, you can tell me the message of this story. We had some great answers at the first service, so I'm holding you to a high standard. One day, a man was traveling from a faraway city, and suddenly he met up with a group of thieves. The thieves took everything he had, and they beat him up and left him lying by the side of the road. And the man was in pain. He lay there and he heard footsteps. "Oh, someone is coming," he thought. "I hope they will help me." It happened to be a priest who came by, someone rather like me or Reverend Tom. A priest walked by, but when he saw the man lying on the side of the road, he decided to take a different road because he was in a hurry and didn't want to be bothered. After a little while, he heard footsteps again lying there on the road. He wanted to call out, but he was so tired and in pain that all he could do was moan. "Maybe this person will see and help me," thought the man. This time, the man who passed by was a Levite, a well-known teacher in the temple. I was thinking this is sort of like Michelle, a teacher in the temple. So surely she would want to help the poor man, but when she saw the man lying by the side of the road, she looked down and turned her head. She walked by completely ignoring the poor hurting man. We're not sure why, maybe because he was kind of gross and dirty, covered in blood, but she walked by, she ignored the man. The man was lying there, and it wasn't too long before he heard another set of footsteps. He wanted to believe that this person would reach down and help him, but at this point he had almost lost hope. By this time the man had given up, and he was sure he was going to die there, right on the side of the road. Now, who knows who the man was who was traveling down the road at this time? The Samaritan. So he was from Samaria, and actually at this time, nobody even really liked people from Samaria. He was a stranger, and the man thought, "It's pretty unlikely that the Samaritan will want to help me." But when he passed by, the Samaritan noticed the man lying on the side of the road, beaten and bloody, and he wanted to help. He felt sorry for him, and so he got off his donkey and bent down next to the man and cleaned his wounds and tied bandages on him. Then he carefully put the man on his own donkey and took him to the nearest hotel. He stayed with the man overnight and took care of him. The next morning, the Samaritan had to leave, but he knew he couldn't take the man with him. So when he paid the bill, he gave the innkeeper 2 coins of silver, saying, "Take care of him. Feed him, and make sure he gets everything he needs. Keep a bill, write it down, and when I return, if there is anything owed to you, I will pay it." So what is the lesson of this story? Does anybody have any ideas? You can be surprised by who can help you. That's a great thought. I agree with that. Anybody else? That is so true. That is so true that we have to live up to our titles, especially people in a position of power are called to help and not to harm. And one of the things I was thinking about is how it's not like we have a limited supply of kindness. We have an unlimited supply. It's not like we lose something when we're kind to others. We can keep being kind and keep giving. We don't lose anything by being helpful. We gain something. So I just encourage everybody to reflect on this story today. Thanks to everybody who shared their awesome thoughts. And we're going to hear a wonderful sermon this morning about being kind. And in religious education, young people are also going to talk about being nice and being kind. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Eileen. It's our custom here that those going to religious education are led out by a lantern, the light of which is illuminated from a spark of the chalice of our common flame that we let to together. And I think maybe we have a different?
We do.
Luke Dross is going to be our lantern bearer. It's a great honor to carry the lantern, so I would like everyone to follow Luke out. Remember, the line goes around this way and then up this aisle and out the door. Thank you. Each week when we come together, we bring with us the joys, the sorrows, and the concerns of that week. There are those joys that just cry out to be shared. And there are sorrows that, which by sharing, we lessen the burden on ourselves and on others when people share in our caring. And also, there are concerns that are worthy for all of us to hear. If you have a joy or sorrow or concern that you would like to share this morning, please raise your hands and one of our helpers will bring a microphone to you and another will light a candle for you. Assisting with joys and concerns this morning will be Marvin Drake, one of our lay ministers. Mike Fitzer, our music director. And I think I'm going to need volunteer because the other person I don't think is the Hector, our president, will also assist. Hector Myron, one in the back.
My name is Kathy Haley, and I'd like to light a candle for a very good family friend, Christine Way, who is a long-term resident of Stowe, and a very long-term, as I said, family friend, and her legacy will be felt by all the school kids here because she was very instrumental in getting Center School built.
Ginger Dreyer, I'm delighted that my friend Faye is here from Florida. We just spent some wonderful days with some iffy weather and nice weather also up in Maine and Acadia, Bar Harbor, and over at Bridgeton, Maine, where we used to go with our children 40 years ago.
Hi, I'm Russell Hart, and I just learned this morning that two mental health clinics, one in Lowell, one in Chelmsford, both serve, you know, underserved populations. They've closed abruptly because of bankruptcy. Presumably, it's because of the decrease in reimbursement rates coming from Medicaid and coming from insurances. They continue to cut yearly. This has a lot to do with the choices that we have made about funding war rather than funding human services. It has a lot to do about the choices that we make at the ballot box, and we may want to keep that in mind. Thanks.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ann Wickham, and I'd like to light a candle of sadness for my mom, Miriam Wickham. 2 weeks ago, she had a stroke in her eye, which has left her with double vision. And then last Sunday, her partner of 5 years, Fred Hubbard, died unexpectedly. So my mom is really struggling right now.
Okay, I am Sharon Brownfield, and I'd really have a joy to share. And the joy I have is I want a big thank you for all the people who were co-chairs for the fair, because without them, the fair would not have been a success. So really, thank you, and all the volunteers. So it really was a community effort. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm David Gray, and I'd like to light a candle of hope for my wife, Karen. She's been eyesight in a fog for some time, and she was diagnosed with corneal edema. There'll be an operation the end of the month, and we're hoping that it goes well. Thank you.
Prayers are with you.
My name is Bob Glorioso, and I'd like to light a candle for Uncle Chet. Uncle Chet was 91, and he was one of the few last survivors of the Great War. He was in the Battle of Palau and Iwo Jima as a Marine and survived both of them. He was a terrific guy, and we'll miss him.
Hi, I'd just like to have a candle lit for Jolene Sullivan, our membership coordinator. She's not able to be here today, but her uncle did pass away this week, and I know that she would like it if everyone could keep her in their thoughts and prayers.
Hi, my name is Kate Imhoff, and I'd like you all to keep my dad in your thoughts and light a candle for him. He had a stroke last December, and he's living a very different life these days, and I talk with him every week. And he's living in Arizona where there are no mental health services, really, and he's very depressed. And anyway, so if you could just keep him in your thoughts, he's struggling. Thanks.
I'd like to light a candle in support of the families and in memory of those nine people on the junior college campus in Washington that were the victims of gun violence and all the victims of gun violence in our world.
I'd like to light a candle for a family friend of mine who just yesterday her dog was hit by a car and is still alive but not doing very well. They're talking about some surgery next week. So the candle for her and her dog.
I'd like to light candles for both sons. My older son has survived through 8 weeks of radiation therapy for treatment of cancer and is finding that he's getting his strength back. My youngest son has found a job cooking again, his first love, and is able to go skydiving, his second love.
Let us light a final candle for those joys, sorrows, and concerns that remain unspoken this morning. We hold them all in our hearts, those spoken and those known only to us, seeking the courage to face our own challenges and the resolve to comfort, support, and assist others who are experiencing difficult times. This morning in our time of meditation and prayer, there is a sung refrain. It's found at number 1048 in the turquoise or teal-colored supplement. Latin words, ubi caritas et amor Deus ibi est. Where charity and love abound, God is there or God is found. I invite you to reflect with me on situations where we experience profound kindness, charity, and compassion and love, and to affirm them by singing after each reflection that refrain. Mike will introduce it by singing it once, and then all respond, and we'll sing it after each set of prayer.
Ubi caritas et amor, ubi caritas Deus ibi est, ubi caritas et
when we treat a stranger as a friend, when we seize the opportunity to notice that someone needs our kindness, and when we take the time to do or say the kind thing, when we are in a strange land or a difficult place, and others treat us with kindness, kindness prevails, the sacred is found.
Ubi caritas et amor, ubi caritas Deus ibi est.
When we stretch ourselves and perhaps go where we are not comfortable to help others, when we open our hearts to let the love inside us out, when we visit the sick, feed the poor, bring hope to the prisoner, or stand with someone who is being treated unjustly, loving kindness prevails. There is a sacred connection.
Ubi caritas et amor, ubi caritas Deus ibi est.
In every situation where we accept the challenge to let go of hate and selfishness and give witness to love, in every situation where we recognize the poor and the downtrodden as brothers and sisters, truly accepting them as equals, in every attempt we make to respect those who are different from us, even when their ideas are hard to understand and accept, when we realize that the many gifts which we have been blessed must be shared generously with those who have less. And when we learn that love is not something we hold on to, but something we give away at every opportunity, then charity and love prevail, and there is found God.
Ubi caritas et amor. Ubi caritas Deus ibi est.
Iris, would you join me down front, please? Each week, we take up an offering. We offer you an opportunity for generosity. And each week, that offering, the non-pledge portion of that offering, is split. One half goes to the church, and one half goes to a worthy local, national, or international organization. Generally one which members of this church are involved in giving to with more than just their time, but with their talents and with their energies. And Iris is here today to tell us about the recipient for this month, the month of October, which is the month of breast cancer awareness, as you can see by your pink order of service.
Good morning, good people. I'm really not into the sermon, the subject of today. I'm feeling more like a gentle, angry people. I don't know, how many of you have had people in your lives that you cared about or loved who suffered from cancer? I'm just curious. And so, you know, I'm angry. And it's very hard to deal with because there's not a lot that can be done for those once you're diagnosed with metastatic cancer. And they always say, oh, find a cure. But I'd really rather say, let's not go there. Let's not find a cure. Let's stop this from happening. Because I feel that I have a stalker in my life that sneaks up on me and catches me just when I think that things are going okay. And so I'm angry. I'm angry that I lost my friend, Chris Way, and many other women who I've lost through my support group, which is at the Healing Garden. When I was here last year, and I was feeling much better, but I'm in the middle of more treatment, getting brain radiation. And I don't want to go. I don't want to get these treatments anymore. I don't like these treatments, and cancer makes me angry. So I've scheduled all of these treatments that I have coming up, circled around the Healing Garden, around the support that I get from the Healing Garden. The Healing Garden is a nonprofit organization that is in Harvard, Massachusetts. And they provide services, counseling, massage therapy, music therapy, all different kinds of things that make my life better. It's a place where I can go, and I may have said this last year, and cry when I need to cry, because it's a lot to bear. And the Healing Garden is one of the only places, and I just saw how many of you have also been affected by cancer in your lives and your loved ones' lives. It's one of the only places where you can really go and cry and talk about how angry you are with your situation. And I think it's really important for people to support this place, because there are not a lot of places like it. And it really improves the quality of my life, and I believe extends my life through improving the quality of life. And so I hope that today that you can be generous to both the Healing Garden and, of course, to the church, because the church community is also a wonderful place to go and feel that there are other people who understand. And we hear it every week, you know, somebody's got cancer. And that is something that I think, you know, it's not about finding a cure. It's about preventing it from happening. Because once you've got it, it's really becomes a stalker in your life. And so that's why I felt more like a gentle, angry people than I had was feeling kindness. So I hope that you all can find it in your heart and remember, you know, people who you've loved, who've suffered, and who have lost. Thank you.
The morning offering, both for the church and for the Healing Garden, will now be gratefully accepted.
So many things we can't control, so many hurts that happen every day, so many heartaches that pierce the soul, so much pain that won't ever go away. How do we make it better? How do we make it through? What can we do when there's nothing we can do? We can be kind. We can take care of each other. We can remember that deep down inside we all need the same thing. And maybe we'll find, if we are there for each other, that together we'll weather whatever tomorrow may bring. Nobody really wants to fight. Nobody really wants to go to war. Everyone wants to make things right. So what are we always fighting for? Does nobody want to see it? Does nobody understand? The power to heal is right here in our hands. We can be kind. We can take care of each other, we can remember that deep down inside we all need the same thing. And maybe we'll find, if we are there for each other, that together we'll weather whatever tomorrow may bring. And it's not enough to talk about it, not enough to sing a song. We must walk the walk about it, you and I. Do or die, we've got to try to get along. We can be kind, we can take care of each other, we can remember that deep down inside we all need the same thing. And maybe we'll find, if we are there for each other, that together we'll weather whatever tomorrow may bring. And maybe we'll find true peace of mind, if we always remember we can be kind.
Thank you, Mike. I'd like you to join me in a responsive reading. It's the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson, found at number 661 in the Gray Hymnal. I'll read the regular type if you would read the italics. We have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken.
The whole human family is bathed with an element of love like a fine ether.
How many persons we meet in houses, whom we scarcely speak to, whom yet we honor and who honor us.
How many we see in the street or sit with in church, whom though silently we warmly rejoice to be with.
Read the language of these wandering eye beams.
The heart knoweth. Please remain seated and join us in singing the Buddhist meditation number 1031, filled with loving kindness. We'll sing it three times. The first time we say, may I be filled. The second time, may you be filled. And the third time, may we be filled.
May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be. Filled
I hope Emerson is right in saying that we have a great deal more kindness than is ever spoken. Sometimes I'm not sure that is the case. Sometimes, too often, I witness folks being downright mean, or at least very uncaring, speaking words that hurt people right to the core, looking down upon those and being rude to those who they perceive as beneath them in some way, creating a scene of nastiness. Yesterday, I was driving home from our fair on Route 290. There's some construction going on in Worcester on 290, and I wanted to get off my exit where there is some construction. So I put my blinker on and tried to pull over, but the person behind me on that inside lane sped up and wouldn't let me in. Instead, he pulled up beside me, put down his window, screaming, shaking his fists, "Give me the finger." So I slow down to drop behind him. He slows down to stay beside me, continuing doing the same thing. Finally, I was able to drop back behind him and pull in so I could get off the exit. But why, I wondered, did he need to be so unkind? Sometimes there's unkindness that isn't planned or intentional at all. Can you think of times when you've just been too busy to be kind, too otherwise involved, too oblivious to the need for kindness? Being kind or nice is something I want to be, and I like to think I am most of the time, but there are times that I'm impatient with perhaps some person trying to do their job. I'm in a hurry, and I'm not very kind. You know, the solicitation caller, the slow checkout clerk, the incompetent customer service person we get when we dial that 800 number for some kind of help. I'm afraid at times I have been less than kind to them. There are many situations when we fail to show kindness to others who really might need some at that time. That said, as Emerson suggests, I do think there's more kindness in us than we may project, but sometimes it needs to be prodded to come out. We need to be more aware of those around us and who need that kindness, and more focused on our capacity to be kind and the power that that kindness has. One story illustrates that point for me. I shared it with you once several years ago, so I tried to think of a different illustration. I actually wrote several down, but everything fell short compared to this one. So I hope if you've heard it before, you won't mind hearing again, because I think it's this story that in fact proves Emerson is right. Many years ago, in my other life, before I was a minister, I often had to travel. The time I want to tell you about began with a business trip to England. It was an exhausting trip, crammed full of meetings and stressful decision-making, and I worked until the last possible minute before grabbing a cab to the airport to catch my plane. For those of you who don't know, I practiced law for many years, and I had a case in court here in Massachusetts the very next day, so I was looking forward to several hours of good sleep on the plane. I boarded the plane in London and was getting settled in to take my nap when, just before we were scheduled to take off, on came a mother with three small children. One was an infant. The other two were probably maybe 2 and 4. She was schlepping diaper bags and bottles and toys and carry-on luggage and was trying to carry the infant and hold each of the other two with a hand. The baby was crying. The other two were whining and pulling to get away from her, and I just knew where they were going. The three empty seats in the row in front of me on the plane. It took forever for them to get into their seats, even delaying our takeoff. They sort of settled down, but as soon as the plane started to move, they were crying and yelling, and once in the air and the seatbelt sign came off, so were the two children off. crawling under the seats, escaping down the aisle. In my traveling experience, which I've done a lot of traveling, before and since, I have never seen a fiasco on an airplane quite like this one. For those who wanted to get some sleep or even read or watch the movie, it was impossible if you were in our section of the plane. The stewardess tried for a while to calm things down with little success, and basically she gave up. I don't think childcare was really her thing. Looks were being exchanged around the plane. Why wasn't this mother controlling her children? Some passengers inquired if there was another seat in a distant part of the plane to which they could be moved. Everyone around me seemed to have the same attitude. Why me? Why did they have to be assigned to seats near me? Why do I have to endure this annoyance? People were making unkind remarks under their breath and not so much under their breath. And finally, one person said something like, "Please control your child or your children," to the mother. And she burst into uncontrollable sobbing. And at that moment, something amazing happened on the airplane. For me and for many of the other passengers near me, the focus changed. It changed from our self-centered focus on our needs to a focus on her needs. We might have had every right, we paid for it, you know, to expect a quiet flight, an undisturbed flight. But the way we were acting wasn't right. The woman was struggling. We seemed to have no compassion for her. Then this question came to me. How can I show some kindness in this situation? It didn't just come to me. All at once, we went into action. We passed the kids around, bounced babies on our knees. We fed and burped the little one and rocked her to sleep. We played with toys. We had a truck going up and down the aisle of the plane. Some folks would just go and sit beside the mother and talk to her, many telling her stories about how tough it had been to raise their kids. One act of kindness just seemed to follow another. The baby quieted down, and the kids, still very active, were really happy with all their new playmates. And slowly, we learned her story. She was the wife of a U.S. soldier. They'd been living together as a family in England, where he was assigned, but now he'd been sent off to combat duty, and he was going to be gone for a year. She was moving home to the States with the kids to be with her family while he was away on duty. The separation had just happened a day or two before, and it was still very hard for the family. The kids didn't understand. They missed their dad. She was so frightened that something was going to happen to him, and she really needed him to help raise the children. She knew the trip alone with three kids was going to be difficult, but she didn't have anyone else who could help her by traveling with her. She said just getting them packed into the airport had been a nightmare, and she was so sorry for the trouble they were causing. Our circle grew. Soon everyone near us on the plane wanted to be involved. We had more surrogate grandmas and uncles than you could shake a stick at. People were offering their car keys as toys to play with. They were finding cookies and crackers in their luggage to give the children as treats. We were in Boston before you knew it, with the kids sleeping in our arms. Three of our team carried the children off the plane, and many others helped by carrying the shoulder bag and the baby seat and the diaper bag and the carry-on luggage. Some of us smelled like babies and had a little drool or throw-up on us. And I have to say, we wore it almost as a badge of pride. At the luggage claim, the grandparents and other family members were there to help, and they looked rather surprised to see our team. And we sort of reluctantly turned the children over and all the stuff over to them. The family's check bags came through, and we said our goodbyes. And it was so strange, because I have to say, after being so disturbed that I even had to sit near them on the plane and I wasn't going to get the sleep I needed, etc., now I really didn't want them to leave. After they left, the rest of us got our bags and we left, but not exhausted, but energized and with our spirits lifted. It was as if we had a profound religious experience on that plane. You know, once when asked to describe his religion, the Dalai Lama said, "This is very simple. My religion is kindness." And it isn't just his religion that can make that claim. Every major religion and philosophical tradition that I'm aware of has teachings of kindness and compassion at its core. As best as I can determine, Confucius was the first to teach what we have come to know as the Golden Rule. He was asked which of his teachings his disciples should practice all day and every day, was the question. His answer was the teaching called Shu, loosely translated means consideration. And that is, in Confucius' words, never to do to others what you would not like them to do to you. This, he said, was the thread that ran through the spiritual method that he called the Tao and pulled all its other teachings together. The Buddha was to agree with Confucius, for the Buddha taught that to reach the realm of the sacred peace called nirvana, it took discipline. And to that end, he taught the discipline of immeasurable love or loving kindness, which we sang just a few minutes ago. He said that exists for everyone. These two great Eastern traditions agree with Emerson that compassion or kindness is abundantly available within us. Its essence, all agree, in essence, all agree that it is within us, but we must call it out so we can transcend our strong, self-focused way of being. Our selfishness is strongly rooted in our primitive brain, where our survival instincts lie, and it's reinforced by fears that we face daily. But also within us is the ability for great kindness and compassion that can overcome our more base thinking. Interestingly, the three great monotheistic traditions also place kindness and compassion central in their teachings. You know, prior to the destruction of the Jerusalem temple in the year 70, Judaism had been a temple religion of sacrifice and ritual. But after that, it focused on teachings of the ancient texts and the flourishing new scriptures. The great Jewish thinker Hillel, who was a contemporary of Jesus, once was approached by a non-believer who told him that he would convert to Judaism if Hillel could recite the entire Torah while standing on one leg. Hillel replied, "What is hateful to yourself, do not to your fellow human beings. That's the whole Torah. The remainder is just commentary." The great Rabbi Akiva, who was executed by the Romans in the year 135, taught the famous commandment, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, was the greatest principle of the Torah. Essentially for Jews since this time, where once they had atoned for wrongs they did through sacrifice and burnt offerings, now practicing kindness and compassion towards others was the way to do it. This morning you heard in the Message for All Ages an example of Jesus' teachings of kindness, not just to those who are like you, your tribe, your people, but to those different from you. Universal kindness and compassion, if you will. If you look at the stories Jesus told as recorded in Gospels, there are many which are simply lessons in kindness. There's a story of kindness to the lepers, towards the prostitutes, towards the sinners, towards the stranger, even towards the enemy. In the early Christian church, compassion becomes the truest test of spirituality. You sang that message in the ancient proclamation earlier, Ubi caritas et amor Deus ibi est, where charity, compassion, kindness, however you want to translate the word caritas, wherever that's found, God or the sacred is there. Kindness or compassion is what is central to a life of Christian faith. And isn't that, for those of you who are watching all the news on this, the very message that the Pope was traveling with as he went through the United States. And what about that third monotheistic tradition, the one that is so often accused of being a violent faith? Well, you know, at the time Muhammad was born, tribal warfare and violence was at a very high level. The Prophet Muhammad was keenly aware of this when he taught, "No one can be a believer unless he desires for his neighbor what he desires for himself." Some of you, I'm sure, know Muslim friends who often recite a little prayer, a little recitation before doing other things. If you think about it, think about the words they said. Because a Muslim, by definition, is one who surrenders his ego, his selfishness, and contemplates God's merciful compassion in order to cultivate that kindness and compassion in his or her own life. Yes, in all these great religions, there are certainly texts about violence and violence accounts. But they're not at the heart of any of these faiths and are far superseded by those texts that emphasize compassion and kindness and love. I know that many in our society, and we hear this in commentary all the time, think religion is sort of the enemy. You've heard it said so many times that religion has been the cause of more wars and suffering than anything else. And frankly, I'm getting a little tired of that version of history. The cause of war has generally been greed, ambition, hate, lust for power and control. And religion has been used and abused to cover up the real motivations and give a sense of legitimacy to these wars. It's time we look at what all these religions really have to say is central to their belief system. And when you do, you will find that it is compassion and kindness. Moreover, it is not only central to religious systems of thought, but every major humanist philosophical tradition, from the ancient Greeks to the modern times, teaches also the importance of kindness and compassion. To quote the Dalai Lama once again, "Whether a person is a religious believer or not doesn't matter much. Far more important is that they be a good human being." There are many things that draw us to narrow self-interest and hold us back from being the best human we can be. We all need to engage again and again with those teachings that help us be better human beings and thereby make for a better world. The followers of any one of the world's religions could make the same statement the Dalai Lama did of his faith. "My religion is kindness." And in fact, they have. And there have been saints and prophets and sages in each who, in fact, have truly lived that religion. We as Unitarian Universalists, who in our principles specifically affirm the need for compassion in all human relationships, can make that statement, "Our religion is kindness." Yet few of us, I think, have really come close to living that message. The role of religion, pretty simple. It's to cultivate the good in us and to turn us from self-centeredness to compassionate otherness. No one's asking you to be a martyr. You don't have to give up all your worldly belongings. But there is so much that each of us can do. One compassionate and loving act leads to another. And slowly our life changes when we regularly ask the question, "How can I show kindness in this situation?" It can be as simple as how you interact with a person next to you on an airplane, or at work, or in school. Your simple acts of kindness and compassion can make an enormous difference in the lives of others and in your own life and in the world. We have kindness within. We have these teachings to guide us. Let us show forth that kindness and compassion each day and every day to a world that is so clearly in need of it.